I think it's just, I see, you can hear it over there. Oh, you hear it over here too? Am I just crazy? You hear that? Not from over there? I mean, I can yell, you could probably hear me. Can you hear me back there? You can move. Oh, okay. He's like, no. I don't know, is there some other thing to do? You can hear me because you're sitting right there. Oh, the banging, that's just me, I'm banging on it. Yeah, that'll just make those people slightly happier. But I still don't think it's solving your problem because it's not coming through here. Oh, the technical difficulties. Really?
Yeah, it looks like I thought perhaps it was muted over here.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But
press to unmute.
Try that.
Do you
want to try resetting it?
Yeah, they're just gonna make it louder.
That'll basically.
Is there a different one?
Yeah, so this is the one for that room over there, but this one just says it's combined with this one.
Right.
There you go.
It's just off.
And it's not just his microphone, because I tried it with this handheld microphone, and it's the same thing. So it looks like it's just not getting through.
Well, what do we think? Can you hear me over here? Will you be able to deal with it? Yes? Yes? If you look really unhappy, just go over there. If you're over there and you're hearing me too well, just come over here. It's a full range of options. Okay, why don't we get going? Is that too loud over there now? No, okay. It sounds really weird to me. Okay, welcome back. So, this is 354. What we're going to do today is we're going to do a few things, which I wrote out here. We'll do a little review just so we remember where we were. We will then talk about the C preprocessor. It's actually, when you look at C code, you're not looking at one language, you're looking at two, generally. And the one language that's embedded within the other language is called the C preprocessor. It's a macro language. It's used all the time in C code to the extent that it's abused all the time. You shouldn't do too much with it, but you should certainly understand it. And then finally, what we'll be able to look at, even though you've kind of written one already, is a proper program that you can understand every character in the program. Then what we'll do is we'll expand a little bit. We'll look at floating point and double floating point representations just briefly. In fact, there are people who have spent their careers studying things like how you should represent real numbers on computer systems and process on them. We're unfortunately not going to spend the entire semester doing that, but we will briefly understand some of the limitations of floating point in C, just like we understood the limitations of integer representation in C. Then what we will start to do is build towards more interesting programs. Our goal here is to get you to be able to write semi-interesting programs as soon as possible. We've been starting a little bit slowly, you can tell if you've been doing the second homework. And one way we're going to do that is we're going to look at compound data types and how to make interesting records, essentially collections of information that are relevant to your program in C. That's basically done with one primitive called a struct or a data structure of some kind that you create. Then we're going to look at this last mystery. We've talked about a few different types of memory. We know in our address space in our program that there is, well, what's in our address space? In our program is memory. What things are in there right now? What have we already talked about? What types of memory? The stack. Great. So at the very end of the address space, typically, that doesn't have to be the case, by the way, but very typically, almost every system you'll use today, at the very end, the high numbers of your address space, high addresses, is a stack, and we have our stack allocated variables that are on there. What's at the other end of the address space? Yeah. Yeah, there is a heap, and that's what we're going to talk about today. So that's like the mystery unveiled. Great job. No, that's perfect. It's good to know things. And so what's above the heap is our program code, of course, that we have instructions in memory. And we'll think of it as our C program up there, but of course it's really machine, you know, bits that tell the machine what to do. There are also statically allocated variables at that end. So for example, if you put a global declaration of a variable, that's going to be near the beginning of your address space. And then this third type of memory we're going to talk about today is called the heap, and it's memory that you have to manage explicitly. So you have to call a routine called malloc to allocate memory in that heap, and then you have to call something to free it, otherwise you can run out of memory pretty quickly. So unlike the stack, which is automatically managed for you, as you, for example, go into a routine, you have stack allocated variables, and when you leave that routine, those stack allocated variables are deallocated for you by the C runtime. C does that for you. The heap you manage. And any interesting data structure, of course, is going to be built inside the heap. And later this semester, what we'll do to really get a sense of that is you'll write your own heap management code. So you'll see exactly how a heap is managed, at least in a simple form. Then what we'll do, because to write interesting programs, you kind of have to deal with them, is we'll spend the last part of class going over important parts of the C library. So we'll look at just a bunch of things, including file I/O and math and string operations and just a bunch of stuff that you'll see very commonly in almost every C program. Every C program you're going to write in here, certainly, and probably most anywhere, is going to link with the C library, which means it includes a bunch of functions that you're going to use commonly in a C program. So we're going to start to understand all the pieces of that. Okay, and then that's kind of as far as I think we'll get today. It's possible we'll run a little quick and then we'll get end early, but I now realize I should never say that because it just makes people have false hope. So, sorry, pretend I didn't say that. Okay, we're going to start out with a little review, and we're going to do that through a handout. We're going to write a little code. So what's the fastest way to hand this out? Give it to the front. I like that. And how should they distribute it? Split it. Send it two directions. So, okay, anytime you see it, split it and send it in two directions. What's that? It's a tree, right? We're learning data structures, algorithms, everything, including a physical manifestation. See, if you just pass it one at a time, it's a linked list, it's called. It's going to take forever. So split it, spread it out, get it flying across. Whoosh. I'm going to time this. How long is it going to take Epic employees to distribute paper as fast as possible? It's already been 6 seconds. We should get this done in like 30 seconds. 30 seconds. Can it be done? Just split it and send it. Boom, half. Boom, boom, boom. The power of logarithms. That thing should fly through here. It should be flying. It should hit you. You should be careful. Paper can cut. It's dangerous. It's a dangerous class. You have thumbs and things, yeah. I know. That's the problem with humans. They have thumbs. Actually, that's what's good about humans. How close are we to getting done? I think throughout the year we're going to time how long it takes to pass out handouts. So far we are at doing very badly. All of your grades are, this is a big part of your grade. Seriously, we're maxing at like a B, BC right now. There's one missing here. How about this? All done over here? Everybody have one? This side did very well even though they're very sparse. Excellent work. More over here? Oh, my God. Okay. Here we go. That's okay. We'll do better. We have goals. We'll do better. Okay. So this is the code. It's up here, too. Let me just explain it. You have two integers, x and y. You're going to call this function called swap. Swap is going to, you have to define what swap looks like. And at the end of it, when you pass x and y should have, you know, x should have the value of y and y should have the value of x. So spend a minute and write that function. And of course, you can use whatever you need to use. For example, pointers, right? Oh, just do, it's exactly like this. There's one on the back. Don't do the one on the back yet. So do the one that looks like this. Oh, is it just called swap int? Sorry. How about that? And I changed the color scheme. So is this more readable than usual? I usually have the black background. Now it's okay, right? I like your optimism. Okay, task clear. Oh yeah, you need a pen. Bring a pen. Bring your mind. Probably telling me to stop talking. If anyone else comes in late now, we're pretending this is a quiz, okay? Just look like really like it's a quiz. Okay, we won't do that actually. That would be mean. Are there any handouts left, by the way? Back here. Oh, thanks. Extra? Okay. I think it's all... Oh, they're coming. People over here seem not so unsatisfied, so they're probably happy not hearing me that much. I don't take it personally. Does anyone need a handout? If you do not have a handout, either look at someone near you or just do it. I have extras up here. And of course, feel free to talk to people next to you. That's okay too. Oh, do you need a pen?
Thank you, sir.
All right, are we good? Let's do it together. Otherwise, we'll just sit here and I'll be staring at you. And it's actually very easy for me, but to just stare at everybody. All right, let's look at this together. So we want to call down here. We have like int x and y, and they've been initialized to some values, whatever, 1, y equals 2. Well, you can really see my hands like that. That's creepy. Okay, I'm going to try to keep my hand off of there. I guess that's not possible. And what are we going to do here in order to get swap to do what we want? What do we have to pass to swap? If we just pass x and y, what happens? Let's say we called swap here, and x and y, and somebody told you, by the way, I figured out how you call swap like this, x and y, and I figured out how to make it so that when swap returns, x and y have switched. What would you say to them? Sorry? Not possible in C, right? It's not C, maybe, is what you would say. And the reason is because why? Why is that? It's the semantics of how we perform a function call, right? This is how we do a function call, and C basically passes by what you would call value, or you can think of it as making a copy of these values. And what we learned about before, let me just get this off here for a second, is all of that happens. So here's our address space, or our memory. By the way, quick aside, I'm going to say this many times in this class. We're just going to pretend we have our one program is using the entire memory from zero to the max size. The operating system, in its magic, allows many programs to exist and each of them to have this illusion. We're going to ignore that. We're just going to pretend we have the entire memory of the system from zero to whatever the max is. What we learned about before is down here there's a stack. It's valid up to some sort of stack pointer. This is all valid part of memory. Up here we have, say, our program code, maybe some other stuff. We're going to learn about a new piece in here. And what we saw in our code previously that we were just looking at there is we have, say, x and y. And x I set to, well, I guess I should copy, 1 and 2. So unfortunately what happens is if we just call swap x, y, what we're going to do is, as part of the call, we grow the stack and we create what people sometimes call a stack frame, or some memory for all of the local variables and parameters that are going to be used inside of this function when it runs. And one of the things we're going to do is we're going to pass, let's say, those two copies of those two variables. And we might call them, let's say we're defining up here, if we define the function like this, swap, I keep calling it swap instead of swap int. I assume you'll figure that out. If we just said int a and int b, like this, then essentially what I would create up here is A and B, and I would populate them with the values X and Y. And then whatever I did up here to A and B, it would just be modifying those. When I return back to the caller, wherever I called this from, X and Y would remain the same. Great. So we're not going to do that. Any questions about that? There are other things that get popped on the stack that we didn't talk about very much during a call and return. For example, probably the most important thing is when you call a function, you have to what you push onto the stack is the return address. You have to say, where do I jump back to when I'm done running this function? But we'll talk more about that later. Okay, so we're back here. Clearly, we're going to have to use some kind of pointers here. Int star A, let's say. Int star B. And then let's go ahead and define this function. So who has a good sense of how this is going to work? What should we do? What's the first thing we should probably do? Another variable. Yeah, when we're swapping things, we probably want to have a place to kind of move things to. So let's call something temp. Let's say that is equal to star A. Let's say star A is equal to star B, and then star B equals temp. Okay, so that's a kind of a simple swap. And if you think about how that works, again, thinking about our stack, you should be thinking about the mechanics of this. So we had X and Y down here when we, and we have to, of course, pass the address of X and Y to swap int, sorry, 1 and 2. When we then make this call, this is, let's say, some address. Let's call this 1,000. Let's call this address 1,004. When we make the call, we create this new stack frame somewhere else on the stack. And we have on there, we're going to have A, which is a pointer, B, which is a pointer, and temp, which is just an integer. And A and B are going to be pre-populated because that's what we're passing to the function. So this is our stack pointer here that's telling us what's valid. A is going to have what inside of it? What's going to be inside of it? When I call swap int with address X, address Y, what's going to end up here in this new stack frame inside of A? Yeah, the address of X, 1,000. Inside of B, we're going to get this address of Y, which is, I guess, 1,004. And then temp is going to have nothing in it. And then what temp is going to be assigned to is we're going to dereference A. We're going to say, don't give me A. Don't give me the value of A, which would just be 1,000 if you just wanted the value of A. Give me what's at the value inside A, indirectly, right? What's at address 1,000. So temp is going to get assigned to whatever is at address 1,000. So you can think of that as being 1. And then we're going to say set whatever is at A to whatever is at B, so et cetera. So we'll basically change this and change this to 2 and 1. Okay, so that's how you write a simple swap function. Now a slightly harder challenge. Flip over your page. I think I called it intro 2. Okay, this is a very similar function. Hey, I think there's some audio not over here, but I can't tell. Is it over here now? No, it started over here. It's just because you walked in. You did something. You pressed the button. Got to press the button. Thank you. Okay, so what we have now is swap int pointer. Okay, we have two pointers, X and Y. One has the address of some variable A in it. The other has some address of B in it. And now we want to write a routine that swaps those pointers. So spend 2 minutes, think and talk about it, and then we can talk about both of them more broadly. All right, why don't we do this together? If you haven't had enough time, well, I'm sorry. We will just look at the code. And here we go. I'll ignore all these things. So sometimes people get confused. They say, they remember, sometimes what do human beings do when you tell them something? They try to turn it into a rule they can remember. One rule that people try to remember, hey, when I want to change something in C, in a function, I should probably pass some kind of pointer. That's not the right rule. Do not remember it that way. When you want to change a particular variable, you have to pass a pointer to that variable. If that type that you're passing in that you want to change is already a pointer, you have to pass a pointer to that pointer. And you can do that ad infinitum. You can do that, you can have a pointer to a pointer to a pointer. If you have a type that's a pointer to a pointer to a pointer to a pointer, if you want to change it in a function, you have to pass a pointer to a pointer to a pointer to a pointer to a pointer. I forgot how many I did. One more. You have to do one more pointer. So in this case, we have two pointers to integers, X and Y. We want to change their values, so we have to pass their address. What is that? When you put an ampersand in front of something that's of type pointer to integer, now you have an address of a pointer to an integer, or what you would call a pointer to an integer. So you can keep adding stars like this to indicate what essentially what level of indirection we're at. And then the code here looks remarkably similar, right? It's kind of just doing the exact same thing. The only difference, in fact, this code is almost identical. The only difference is how we declare this type here. It's a pointer to an integer. So if that doesn't make, any questions about that? It's a good time to ask questions. Yeah. No, so when we're declaring a, you mean in like a different language, or do you mean in C? Yeah, so in C, this here is telling us, right, what type A1 is and what type A2 is. We can either have base types like int, or like a car, you know, a character, or we can have, we can have structures. And any of those types, you can add one or more stars to it to say, I don't want that type, I want a pointer to that type. You can never add you can't add an ampersand here. There are some that's confusing because in C++ there's ways to declare a reference by putting an ampersand there, but that's probably not your question. So no, you can only put stars there. Here though, you know, anything that we have, like any type that we have, whether it's X or A, we can certainly put an ampersand in front of that variable and say we want not that variable's value, we want the address of that variable. And that's how we use the ampersand in the code right here is an operator, and it's applied to A and B here, and it's applied to X and Y here. Other questions? Yeah. Yeah, you could. I mean, those operators, ampersand and star, they're not limited to a single use, but that's not it wouldn't be a common usage to use it like that. So I don't know if we'll ever see an example where we do something like that. I don't know if I've ever seen code that does that. But yeah, logically it could. In some ways it doesn't make sense. So I'm gonna hold off on that question, and I'm gonna give you a better answer in a minute. But in some ways it's logical, and in some ways it doesn't make sense. So let's leave it at that right now, and I'll come back and give a better answer later. Yeah. Yeah, so when we think about these, all we have to make sure, right, is that the types match, okay? So when we have A1, that is, what type is A1? It's an int star star, right? Then when we dereference it, we put one star in front of this right here, we're basically just saying, now it's an int star. And that's why that matches this over here. It's an int star. So temp is of type int star, and then this thing is of type int star. And so when you assign it, nobody complains about that. So here, temp is just, that's of type int star. And so when we say star A2, we want it to have that value of temp. We're not trying to dereference temp at this point. We just want to take the value that's in temp and put it inside. You know what? Maybe I'll draw a picture of that. That'll maybe make more sense. So it's the exact, in fact, we could use this exact same picture. Well, let's not. And, you know, this is why pointers become confusing. It's like just a tiny little bit of text on the screen, right? It's like an ampersand and a star, but it's very meaningful to understand exactly what those things mean. So what did we have on the stack here? We had actually here A and B, right, of 0 and 1. Then we had X and Y. People read this okay? Oh, usually don't put it like this. X and Y. And X and Y have the address of A, right? We said X equals address of A, and Y equals address of B, yes? So let's pretend this is address 1,000, because that's my number that I always pick, even though that's not very accurate. It's going to be a much bigger number. So when we say X is equal to the address of A, what we're saying is X is going to be 1,004, the value, yes? And then Y is going to be the address of B, which is right here, 1,000. Okay, then what we do is we call swap int pointer. And notice what I pass there. I pass the address of X because I want to switch it. I want that to change, and the address of Y. Now, what are the addresses of X and Y? Well, let's go up here first and look at swap int pointer, which is going to get what I claim is int star star A1 and int star star A2. So on the stack, we have to create room for, when we call into this function, we're going to create room. Well, there's a int star here called temp. So we'll say temp is right here. We'll say A1 is right here, let's say, and let's say A2 is right here. And what did we push into A1? What ends up in A1 and A2 is the address of X and the address of Y. So what ends up in A1 right here? You have to do some subtraction to figure this out. We'll assume all these addresses are in a 32-bit machine or 4 bytes. So what would these addresses be? 996, 992 on our stack. So when I call with this with A1 and A2, A1 gets the address of X. That's what? Right here, 996, yes? And A2 gets the address of Y, which is 992. Okay? So then the first thing we did was we basically said temp equals star A1. Yes? I mean, I combined those two lines, but it's the same thing. So temp doesn't equal A1. It equals the star of A1. So whatever's at 996, which is what? Then what do we say? Star A1 equals star A2. So when we're modifying, this is on the left, that's the destination. We're saying don't put something here, leave that alone. We're saying we're going to put the destination, whatever we're updating, we're going to put into that address, which is right here, yes? This is 996. So that's the destination. And put whatever, here's the source. It's whatever is in A2. Yes? So what's A2 is 992, but star A2 is whatever is in 992 or 1,000. So our destination here gets to be 1,000. And then our last comment here is A2 is equal to temp. And you can see that's actually what we want. But the destination here is 992, and we want exactly actually what's in temp. We don't want what it refers to, because what it refers to is down here. So we want this to be 1,004. Does that make sense? So the littlest bits of code, until you get comfortable with pointers, are confusing. And honestly, I'm dealing with pointers, I will write things down just to make sure as it gets more complicated that I'm understanding what's going on. And understanding the stack and how it relates in a function call, and why whenever you want to change something, you need to send a pointer to that thing, more or less. You always have to have a pointer to the thing that you want to change. That's true, 100%. That's how you write a function like that. So even if it looks like it's a pointer, don't get too excited. Is it a pointing to the right thing that you want to change, or is it the pointer itself you want to change? And if you understand that, honestly, you are like really far along to understanding C programs, because it means you're thinking about C at the right level, which is the level of the memory model, what's going on with pointers and addresses, and you have a mental model of what's going on with the stack. And if you just work through the examples, these are like great exam questions, right? Like, lay out all this memory. What's going to happen when you do this? Yeah. Oh, sorry. So, like, up here? Yeah. So if we say star A1, right? So if we say A1, it's just this value. And if we say star A1, it's whatever's in 996, which was 1,004. And if we say star star A1, it's whatever's in 1,004, which would be 0. So why cares? Because we haven't talked about types really yet. So I've been putting that off as long as I can for two reasons. One, I'm a systems person, not a programming language person, so I don't really like talking about type systems. But two, when we do talk about type systems, we're going to ask, what is the purpose of a type system? Like, why do we declare types in the parameters and in a return type? Why do we do that? That's a really good question. It's kind of a deep question. Why do we do that in C programs or any language that has typing? So that they match, right? So we can say, when I call this function, am I passing the right stuff to it? Or am I passing some arbitrary kind of garbage? So the type system's helping us build a correct program. Here, what I absolutely want is a pointer to a pointer to an integer, because I'm changing a pointer to an integer. Now, you're right. You could write a routine that basically in C, because C has is weakly typed, you could just say these are two numbers, and then treat them in the way that we did in the code, and then have the code do the right thing. But then we're like trying to defeat the compiler, essentially. So we're going to try to, the right type here is it's a pointer to a pointer to an integer. You're right, it's just another address. But it's meaningful that it's a pointer to a pointer to an integer because it means we're changing we're swapping two pointers to integers. Yeah? Well, the way it wouldn't work is that when you pass an address of x, like we do in this code here, it would say that's a pointer to a pointer to integer, but your function just says pointer to integer. So then you'd have to write the code in this kind of horrible way to try to get it to behave in the right way. So the compiler would complain when we try to compile the program, and that's the right thing. And you shouldn't generally like try to do things that make the compiler unhappy. The compiler is your friend, usually. Sometimes it's your enemy, but almost always it's your friend. And when it says don't do that, it should be try not to do it. All that said, we'll talk more about types. I think next time is probably where we're headed to talk about that. And we'll talk about that a little bit more deeply. The reason types are going to come up quite a bit for us and why you have to be extra careful as a C programmer is because there's all these implicit conversions of types that happen all the time. And if you're not careful with that, a huge number of security flaws in the world have occurred because of implicit conversions of types and people not understanding what C does with the type system between certain types. We'll get to that next time, though. Okay. Good questions. Thank you. So that was slide 2. Okay. So one more question. I had one more. Why not? This will be a little bit confusing, but that's our goal, to confuse and delight. Okay. This one isn't on any paper, but you can take a peek at it. This is not very easy to see right now. It is now easier to see. Okay, so there's a routine. I'll just describe it to you. It's called increment array. It's passed a pointer to an integer, but we can also pass an array to that. In many cases, the array and the pointer can be treated interchangeably. Not all cases. I got a great question about that this week on the email list. But anyway, what increment array does is it goes through the array for whatever size it is, and then simply takes each element and adds one to it. This, again, plus equals, as you might remember, is essentially when you say x plus equals 1, you're saying x equals x plus 1. So array sub I plus equals 1. Down here, we have an array of integers, x. We initialize them all to 10. Then we call increment array, passing the reference to the array x here and 10. So then the question is, when we print out some element, I picked the fifth one for no reason. When we print out x sub 5, what value is it going to print? So why don't you think about that, but just for 1 minute. Given all that we know. Okay, well, we could sit here and stare at this for a long time, but I like talking more, so let's do that. Okay, so let's run this. Let's just compile it. What was it called? Intro 3? Let's call it I. Intro 3.c. Okay, what's it going to print? People remember the code? Those are the two guesses, 10 and 11. Anyone have a different guess? All right, nobody's playing the long odds. Give 1,000 to 1 on that? No? I shouldn't do betting in here. Okay, 11. Some mild excitement. Why is that? That's confusing because it looks like, well, we have an array, but we're not like passing a reference to the array. But the thing to remember is the array is the reference. So when we, for example, when we say A block I, what that really is equivalent is to saying dereference of A plus I. So in the routine, when we do that, when we set, you know, what do you say, you know, in the function above, we say like array I plus equals 1, you're essentially, all you have is a reference to the array. The array is sitting in memory somewhere. It's a bunch of integers. And what do we call it, x? And we essentially are just passing that address. That's an array reference is an address. And so therefore, when we're inside of the routine, it's just going to go ahead and update each one in place. It has a reference to it. So that's a little bit confusing because when you look at it, it doesn't quite look like, you know, the pointer to the thing that we want to change. In other words, when you pass arrays to functions, now you have a new thing you have to remember a little bit, which is, yes, I can absolutely modify that array. If I don't want to modify the array, I better make a copy of it. Okay? Make sense? A little confusing. Hopefully, well, that'll all settle in as we do more stuff with arrays and so forth. Okay, now we're just going to look at some code. And, I'm going really slowly. So I was going to review a couple things. Let's just, what we looked at last time was we started to look at, you kind of already dealt with this, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. We looked at strings. Strings are just arrays of characters with a special end marker at the end, which is like a \0. So I think we looked at this last time. I don't think I'm going to talk too much about it. Here's the special character that you'll see at the end of a string. You can initialize strings in ways like this by putting a string literal, double quotes around something. That'll allocate enough space for all of these characters plus one more character space in order to hold that \0. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time on strings. Yeah. Yes. It does know to do that. It knows this is a string literal. That's the kind of level that it knows things, and it knows this is a string, and therefore this must need that much space. Yeah. Compiler is smarter that way. That's actually newer C in some ways. Okay, so that's basic strings. I don't want to spend too much time on this. If we had a string that was going to contain my name, REMZI, we'd have to make it how big? If we made a 5, we'd have a kind of a problem because we want to make a proper string, and the proper string would look something like this. Otherwise, it's just an array of characters. And if we didn't have this, when I went to like print it, for example, or I went to use like a string copy routine or anything that dealt with the string, the routine would essentially just look through memory until it found that \0. So it trusts you. When you say that's a string, it means, oh, there is a \0 there eventually. And the print, for example, will just keep looking for stuff. And it might print out a whole bunch of garbage on your screen. And then you're like, this computer's broken. When in fact, you've just malformed a string. You have to be very careful with strings. Strings are the cause of a lot of security problems. By the way, we've been talking a lot about languages. Last time we talked about mumps, some in a good humor. But every language has all sorts of problems, right? C has so many problems. Mumps, I'm sure, has a lot of problems. There is no language. In fact, the most used languages, like JavaScript, is like the most broken language in the entire world. Every language has problems. Every one of them are different. Your job is to just learn what those problems are so that when you write whatever subset of the language you're writing, you write good quality code. So C has those problems too, including particularly with strings, very weakly typed. Okay, that's string whatever. I don't remember what the other examples were. Right, that's the answer. I had one more thing to look at. No, that's it. Okay, so any questions about strings? Kind of make sense? Yeah. Great. So single character, that's exactly, you answered your question. Perfect answer to your question, which is when it's a character, it's just single quotes, and when it's a string, I put a double quotes around it. And that's just, we just accept that. So if I tried to assign to a something in single quotes, that would be confusing. Like if on this previous, like here, it wouldn't make sense to probably put single quotes around it because this is saying this is an array of characters which looks like a string. And similarly here, it wouldn't make sense to put double quotes because this is not a string, this is a character. S, when I have an array of characters and then I say S0, that type is of type a character. There's just no space for the whole string there. There's only one byte there. So we can't have a room for that character and a \0. Okay, so those are strings. We'll deal with strings a lot. And we'll come back to strings actually today when we talk about the string library, which has a few useful functions that you should know how to use and, of course, know how to avoid the ones that you parts of it you shouldn't use. Okay, so now we're going to do a little bit of I.O. You've already been doing this. How many people have already done the second homework? Some of you, how many people that haven't done it know there is a second homework? Okay, the rest of you, good. So there is, it's a very short little bit of C. What I find is I'm starting slow. The projects will ramp up in difficulty, and sometimes you'll have more time to do them as well. I start slowly because when you hear about C, it sounds like, oh, that makes sense. When you then have to go write the code, somehow all the questions come up. That's just the human nature, right? You start asking questions when you're forced to do things. Same thing for me. When I'm forced to teach something, I actually say, oh, do I really know what I'm talking about? Often the answer is no, then you go read a little more, and then you know a little bit more. So same thing with writing code. So we'll start slowly, but we'll be ramping up. Let's look at a little bit of code to do some I.O. Okay, I think we've looked at this type of code already, but I want to give a little bit of background before we look at it. So this I.O. that we're going to do, input-output that we're going to do, we're going to do two types today. We're going to start with what you would call terminal I.O., you know, basically, you know, things that you type and things that you see on the screen. Later, what we're going to do today is we're going to do file I.O. File I.O. is going to be persistently saving things onto the disk and then being able to read them back. We'll do that later. In Unix, the amazing thing about Unix-based systems is, in fact, doing terminal I.O. and doing file-based I.O. are actually done in essentially the identical way. And we'll see the great power of that. How many people use Unix systems a lot in their life? Okay, so some subset of you. Those of you probably already appreciate what I'm talking about. The rest of you will get to see a little bit about that. We won't do too much Unixism, but it's hard to do some amount of the C without talking a little bit about the Unix world that we live within. In any case, we have in Unix something we call a bunch of what we would call standard input and standard output. And there's actually a third thing we'll talk about in a second. But you can think of these as, you can sometimes we call them file streams, or we just call them streams. And standard input is basically something we read to get input from the user. And standard output is what we write to show something on the screen. Okay, now I didn't say how we do this reading and writing. It turns out there's actually one low-level way to do that, which we won't really talk about. That's a facility provided by the operating system. But in the C library, there's a bunch of functions that are defined for your convenience on top of that that lets you kind of conveniently write to the screen or read something from user input. And so sometimes when we talk about standard input, we'll talk about reading from what we would call standard in. And when we're writing something to the screen, we're writing to something called standard out. There's actually a third part of this, which is also an output stream, and it's called standard error. It's commonly used to report, like, when you're running a program and something goes wrong, instead of writing it to the standard output, it's written to what's called standard error. It looks the same to you if you're just seeing it on the screen because it's just shown on the screen. But you can, in the shell around it, when we're using a Unix system, we can kind of treat it differently and therefore see only like standard error or standard output and therefore treat it differently. But we're going to kind of ignore this for a little bit. Now, as part of every program that runs, standard input, standard output, standard error, these are all variables you can access thanks to the C library, and they're of a certain type. There's something called a file star, pointer to this file thing. We're not going to know exactly what's in that thing, but we just know we have a variable standard in, standard out, standard error. That's part of our program, and when we read from standard in or write to standard out, it's going to do the kind of things we expect. Okay, so that's a bit of a high-level overview. We'll probably come back to that much later when we talk about file I.O. again. Any questions about that? Does that kind of make sense? So let's just look at a couple quick examples. And then we'll take our first break. That was slide 4. Let me switch here. Okay. So here we have just a simple one routine that's defined by the C libraries. Put char, put char. I never know how to pronounce any of these things. And you know what this will do? It takes a character, and then it prints it out. So we can, of course, compile that and then run it. I guess I haven't shown you anything about the compiler yet. Oh, sorry. I've been still using my little wrapper for this part, so we'll continue doing that for now. Because we still haven't quite gotten to a full C program. So you can see when we run it, the output that we get here is that we just get A, but we haven't put a new line, so then immediately it goes into the kind of the rest of the thing that my wrapper is printing out, the return code of the program, which is this value here. So, of course, we could change the program to have a new line in it, too. We can just say special character backslash N, and then when we run the program, then we get A and a new line that moves it to the next line. So that's put char. Now, put char, again, is a function, and internally it's writing to standard output. That's what it's doing. We can look at other, there's lots of other forms of this. There's put string or put S, puts a string. But probably the most interesting is printf. Almost all the output you're going to do in C programs is printf. And so you should definitely spend a little bit of time understanding printf. It's worth understanding printf. There's a family of routines actually that relate to it that we'll talk about. Printf allows us to do formatted printing. So minimally it takes a string, which is the format string. So what's this program going to print out? Yeah, I guess that's appropriate. It's going to print out hello, goodbye, and it's going to print out on one line because there's no forced new line. So the first thing that we see here is we just print hello with a space, but we don't force a new line. Then when we print goodbye, it just picks up right after that. Then we force a new line. That's not too interesting. What is interesting is the formatted type of output you can put together. For example, we can say the int is %d, the character is %c, the string value is in single quotes here for whatever reason. I could, of course, put anything I want. I could just remove them. This is the format string here that tells us what we're going to print out. And then every time we see a percent something, it's basically saying, well, there's an argument here of that type. So %d means it's an integer, so I print out the value of I. %c means I'm looking for a character, so print out the value of c, which is z. And then we have a string here called a string, and it'll say the string is a string. So formatted output is very nice, very useful. It's almost like a little language understanding how to construct a format string. And if you want to learn more about it, the best way to do that is to use what are called the man pages. How many people have ever looked up a man page on a Unix system? So some of you. So here we want to look up printf, say in the C library section of the man pages, which is the third. So you would say man 3 printf. Now this is on my Mac. If you do this on a Linux system, it's going to look slightly different. But it's going to tell you a bunch of stuff about printf. And you can see we're not going to read it all right here because it's too much. Sorry, let me look at that in slightly better. No, it's just not wide enough. So there's a lot of details and a lot of things you can do about that. I recommend spending some time with that. We won't spend a lot of time here. But it's really useful to know all the different things you can do because there's a lot of cool stuff you can do in formatted output. And you can see the other strange thing about printf, and we'll talk about this more today, is it allows for a variable number of arguments. So we need to be able to define functions, which we haven't understood yet how to do this, that take a variable number of arguments. For example, it'd be just as fine for us to say, we just want to print out the integer here. So we might say something like this. And you can see this takes two arguments, the format string and one integer. This takes the format string and then three more variables. So you can see that's the same function. There's somehow we have to figure out whoever wrote printf, the code, knows how to handle the fact that we pass a variable number of arguments. So we'll look at that in more detail later today. Okay, one last example. There's nothing special about the format string, by the way. You almost always see it as within double quotes, like a string literal. But of course, you could even define it elsewhere. You could say, here's the string we're going to print out, and then down here I just refer to it. I just say format, or whatever I want to call it. I could call it, foo. I could call it whatever I wanted. Just the first argument to printf is a string that describes what we want to print out. The next so many arguments are the variables we want to use as part of that string. Any questions about printf? And again, printf is doing the same thing as putc, as same as puts, which is it's writing to this thing, this file star, which is called standard out, which finds its way onto the screen. And it's kind of magic how that's done. It's through the operating system. We'll talk a little bit more about that later today. Make sense? Any questions about it? Everybody good with printf? Printf's really, it's really worth spending some time understanding printf because it's like its own, like I said, its own little language of how you describe a format string. Okay, why don't we take a break? And we'll come back and do something that's a little bit more interesting than printf. So, break.